What this whole system is leading towards, folks, is complete digital control of everybody and a merging of human beings with AI. And when you look at Elon Musk and some of the stuff he's been putting out, he's saying that it is necessary for us to merge with AI. It's going to be the only way to save us against AI completely taking over. And he's saying this needs to be done through a neural net. And listen to this.
So I think if we can effectively merge with AI by improving that the neural link between your cortex and the your digital extension of yourself, which already, like I said, already exists, just has a bandwidth issue, and then effectively you become an AI human symbiote, and if that then is widespread with anyone who wants it can have it, then we solve the control problem as well. We don't have to worry about some sort of evil dictator AI, because kind of we are the AI collectively. So it already exists, just has a bandwidth issue.
Pay close attention to what he said there. What he said was that this interface already exists. It's just that they have to improve the bandwidth. They have bandwidth problems. So how might these bandwidth problems be improved?
Starlink is a form of space-based internet service. The aim of the service will be cheap global internet coverage with 5G service without need for extensive infrastructure or expensive contracts to keep customers locked in for years.
Phase 1 of the Starlink constellation consists of 1,600 satellites, arranged into 32 orbital planes, with 50 satellites in each plane.
Create a comprehensive global communication system that provides high bandwidth, low latency connectivity anywhere in the world, and provides cross links through the satellites so that you can have improved long distance internet. You can actually have a more direct path through space, and photons move faster. And depending upon what fiber optic material they're running through, photons actually move about 40 to 50% faster in vacuum than they do in fiber optic cables.
It's likely that we will merge somehow or another with this sort of technology and it'll augment what we are now, or do you think it will replace us?
From a long-term existential standpoint, that's like the purpose of Neuralink, is to create a high bandwidth interface to the brain such that we can be symbiotic with AI. Because we have a bandwidth problem. You just can't communicate through your fingers. It's too slow.
And where's Neuralink at right now?
I think we'll have something interesting to announce in a few months. That's at least an order of magnitude better than anything else. Probably, I think, better than probably anyone thinks is possible.
How much can you talk about that right now?
I don't want to jump the gun on that.
Speed of light in vacuum is somewhere 40 to 50% faster than in fiber. So you can actually do long distance communication faster if you route it through vacuum than you can if you route it through fiber. If let's say you want to communicate from Seattle to South Africa, if you look at the actual path that it takes, it's extremely convoluted. It'll follow the outline of the continents. It'll go through 200 routers and repeaters, and the latency is extremely bad. Whereas if you did it with a satellite network, you could actually do it in 2 or 3 hops. Let's say at least an order of magnitude fewer repeaters or routers. And then going through space at 50% faster speed of light.
You're currently in a symbiotic relationship. Your cortex and limbic system are in a symbiotic relationship. And generally people like their cortex and they like their limbic system. I haven't met anyone who wants to delete their limbic system or delete their cortex. Everybody seems to like both. And the cortex is mostly in service to the limbic system. People may think that the thinking part of themselves is in charge, but it's mostly their limbic system that's in charge. And the cortex is trying to make the limbic system happy. That's what most of that computing power is oriented towards. How can I make the limbic system happy? That's what it's trying to do. Now, if we do have a third layer, which is the AI extension of yourself, that is also symbiotic. And there's enough bandwidth between the cortex and the AI extension of yourself such that the AI doesn't de facto separate, then that could be a problem.
So the focus is going to be on creating a global communication system. This is quite an ambitious effort. So it's really talking about something which is, it's in the long term, it would be like rebuilding the internet in space. And the goal will be to have a majority of long-distance internet traffic go over this network, and about 10% of local consumer and business traffic.
It's just that the data rate, the rate at which, or the communication rate between you and the cybernetic extension of yourself is slow. It's very slow. And that is like a tiny straw of information flow between your biological self and your digital self. And we need to make that tiny straw like a giant river. Huge, high bandwidth interface. It's an interface problem. Data rate problem. Solve the data rate problem, then I think we can hang on to human-machine symbiosis through the long term.
So I think it's something that definitely needs to be done, and it's a really difficult technical problem to solve. And you know, at the same time, we also make sure we don't create Skynet. ironically, the server room at SpaceX jokingly was called Skynet. If there's some AI apocalypse, it's going to come from some collection of sort of vast server farms, terrestrially based, not via the space-based communication system. I did think about that. anyway, so I think this is sort of like a fundamentally good thing to do, properly designed to give people gigabit level access, kind of 20, 30 millisecond latency, everywhere on Earth. That would be pretty great. And then that same system we could leverage to put it into a constellation on Mars, because Mars is going to need a global communication system too. And there's no fiber optics or wires or anything on Mars. So we're definitely going to need that. We're going to need high bandwidth communications between Earth and Mars. So I think a lot of what we do in developing an Earth-based communication system can be leveraged for Mars as well.
Well, most people don't realize they are already a cyborg.
The satellites we have in mind are going to be quite sophisticated. There'd be sort of a smallish satellite, but with a big satellite's capability. By smallish, I mean in the few hundred kilogram range. Well, it can't be free, because we've got a business. I mean, this would cost a lot to build. I mean, ultimately, over time, to build a full version of the system, we're talking about something that would, you know, be $10 or $15 billion to create, maybe more. And this intend to be to generate a significant amount of revenue and help fund a new city on Mars. So this is, looking in the long term and say what's needed to create a city on Mars. Well, one thing's for sure, a lot of money. So we need things that will generate a lot of money. Spectrum that is omnidirectional and wall penetrating, that spectrum is extremely rare and limited. Spectrum that is not wall penetrating and that is very directional is not rare. It's sort of the difference between kind of a laser beam and a floodlight. You know, if you can have like lots of laser beams, you know, in the limit, that would be sort of a real type beam communication. There's high scarcity for cellular bandwidth. There is not high scarcity for space-to-Earth bandwidth. Iridium satellites, which was a sort of a mere 70, we're talking, more than order of magnitude, larger volume. I mean, there may be some similarities to the way that the Iridium network was done, but in terms of the production, the way it's produced, it's going to be closer to the way that a car is produced or consumer electronics. So we can take things even a step further, and if a satellite didn't work, you just basically take it out of the constellation and deorbit it. An analogy might be between, say, mainframes and PCs. So if you want to have a big data center serving millions of people, it's way better to have an array of cheap PCs than it is to have a few mainframes. And that's basically how airport world like the internet is served with millions of PCs on racks instead of mainframes. Like the main propulsion system we're going to have in mind for the satellite is a Hall effect thruster, which not trivialize it too much, is basically like a loudspeaker. Okay, it's like a magnetic field. I think it's important to assume that terrestrial networks will get much better over time. One of the mistakes that, say, Taldizic made was not assuming that terrestrial networks will get much better over time. So we need to make sure that the system we design is good, even taking into account significant improvements in the terrestrial systems. I do think there are some important differences between what we're doing and say, Taldizic. In the case of Taldizic, they were trying to talk to phones. And then that gets back to that problem of a roof-penetrating situation. And it's particularly difficult when stuff is coming from space. Like, if you're in a skyscraper, it's got to go through 27 floors to reach you. That's not going to happen. Like, there's nothing that will, short of, like, a neutrino. Like a neutrino phone. Yeah, I think we're going to have to pay a lot of attention to security. It would really be unfortunate if it got hacked and taken over. But it's going to require a lot of thought to make sure we are able to protect it from any hacking.
5G, first and foremost, is densification. So it's significantly more transmitters in close proximity to the human. And it is also a sophisticated, illegal, unlawful transmitter. What I mean by that is it is a high-gain dielectric lens antenna. And what that allows 5G transmitters to do is to 3D map its environment in your home. The 868 megahertz frequency is specific for battlefield interrogation systems, so sub-gigahertz. It allows the signal to travel through concrete brickwork with ease, and it can actually data gather. It is a target acquiring system. Phased array is basically radar off the battlefield. It is extremely good at identifying targets and being able to lock on the targets. And not only that, it can specifically target you as an individual. So any judge sitting on an interesting case, let's say, any lawyer, any barrister, anybody doing any work that is potentially controversial, your life could be at threat. So the antenna design that you currently have non-stop of these LED streetlights masquerading as a control management system, it basically battlefield interrogation equipment. The first phased array unit was actually called Mammut, used by the Germans during the Second World War to identify Allied aircraft. Obviously things have moved on significantly since then.